Hi everyone, you're listening to Octahedron, episode...
I forgot.
Six, I guess. It's the 29th of December 2016, and we're coming to you from the Chaos Communication Congress. So here we have my co-host Dirk.
Yes, I'm here.
Zuko.
Hello.
Meredith.
Hello.
And Ryan.
Yep.
And crashing person here. Matthew Frost.
Yes. So, because Zuko has to run to join a talk about the Zcash that he's not giving, but he's working on, then maybe we'll let you talk first. You wanted to tell us a story.
About a love letter.
I thought we all had.
Yes.
Everyone has to go to see the Zcash presentation.
I'm going to see the Zcash presentation.
Okay. Then
but I want to hear the story about the love note.
This is the story about the love note in the blockchain. Because it has to do with CCC. Shortly after the Zcash blockchain was created, a young woman of my acquaintance told me that she'd received a encrypted Zcash payment, and Zcash, the encrypted ones, the payments, they come with a memo field where you can write in like what this payment is for or what your return address should be or where your refunds should be sent or anything like that, right? You know, just an arbitrary field. But that field gets encrypted and embedded into the blockchain along with the payment. So she received this payment, this very small payment of Zcash, and in the memo field, there was an IPFS hash.
Okay.
Dream within a dream.
Which means with an IPFS hash, you can look up a file in IPFS, right? So she took that IPFS hash and looked in IPFS, and there she found tickets to Hamburg. Because this was a love note from her boyfriend who they had been talking about possibly getting together and going to CCC.
Oh, that's so nice.
And so this thing, this encrypted love note, is embedded somewhere in the Zcash blockchain, but only two people can see it.
That's really sweet.
It's the hacker way to do it. It's very charming.
And the, aside from being beautiful, it's also illustrating this neat fact about the Zcash blockchain, which is that it's got both the blockchain properties of being a pinned only. So like if they break up, nobody can go back and delete the love note, right?
Oh.
And or change it. So it's got the append only properties of blockchain, and it also has the confidentiality properties of encryption. No one else can see. No one else can see their love note.
So only they will ever know that they were ever together if they break up.
True love.
But let's hope they don't.
And true love with perfect forward secrecy.
Yeah. It's well, technically not. But
oh. Yes. What if somebody? So it's impossible to change the content behind the hash. So that's but that's a property of IPFS.
Right. IPFS also has the append-only property. Okay. Unfortunately, IPFS doesn't have the confidentiality property. Unless they took an extra step to manually encrypt the tickets, then someone could page through all of IPFS.
But, I mean, wait, how many bits are in an IPFS hash again? That's a pretty big space, as I recall.
Yeah, oh, not by picking random hashes and looking, but by running an IPFS node and inspecting the files that people replicate to you.
Got it.
So that's what I don't like about IPFS. If any IPFS hackers are listening, add encryption.
No kidding.
IPFS is interesting, and I've Andrea and I have done a lot of looking at IPFS as we've been like building out the link-based timestamp chain-based publishing protocol that we're working on. But IPFS is kind of too much hammer for that problem. Really, anything blockchain is too much hammer for distributed publishing because you don't really need consensus. You just need like a record of when stuff changed.
Yeah. There's a lesser property that you want for that.
Right. Yeah, you want append. You want append only, but like consensus doesn't matter.
Okay.
It might though. I'm curious about this memo field that you were talking about. What are the limits on that?
512 bytes.
Okay.
So that's the only limit.
That's
no,
exactly
actually, it's 512 bytes, not 512 bits.
Ah, okay. Fine.
So, Yeah,
so this awkward silence, by the way, with these people, Meredith and Zuko, we will have a chance to record a full-length detailed podcast, I guess, hopefully, on next year, very beginning of next year, right?
I don't think that was really an awkward silence. I think that was more sort of the silence that settles over a conversation as people start to consider the implications of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Process.
Comfortable silence.
Yes, but I just came from like WikiLeaks, so
it's okay.
WikiLeaks is a great name.
It wouldn't be a true HackerCon without everybody being a little tipsy.
I'm maintaining that comfortable buzz is basically like, you know, a required skill for being here.
Exactly.
Okay, so I don't know what Meredith, what do you do lately? What gets you out of bed for the past, I don't know, week?
Being in Texas and having actual sun has been what's gotten me out of bed for the last week. But no, I mean, like, I don't know, interesting projects-wise, my girlfriend and I have been putting a compiler into my parser generator. Mm-hmm.
Tell us more.
My now husband and I put together a parser combinator-based parser generator in C back in 2012. So, like, if you're familiar with Haskell's Parsec or any other parser combinator type framework, it's that just in C, because it turns out you don't actually have to have a lazy language to use parser combinators. It requires some extra like fucking around under the hood, and you have to forward declare stuff. But it still works. The only thing is, the way that we ended up doing pack wrap parsing, it was kind of equivalent to writing a little interpreter for it, because you've essentially got like this, you know, this tree of combinators that is sort of an abstract syntax tree, and then you're walking the tree and applying it exactly the same way that you would like an interpreted expression in Python or whatever. In 2014, a guy named Jeffrey Kupri basically rewrote the parser combinator stuff in Rust using the Rust macro system. It's a library called NOM, and it is absolutely blindingly fast, because since it's written in the macro system, like, you know, nice hygienic macros and stuff, you write your parser in macros, you compile it, the preprocessor generates Rust code, and then the compiler compiles it. And so it's just lightning goddamn fast. Yeah, I mean, this is starting to get used in like VLC and, you know, other you know, widespread Unix projects that are starting to move over to Rust, because it's really just time to abandon C already.
So this is part of your LangSec program of replacing ad hoc parsers, which are security holes.
With rigorous parsers that we can verify is working. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What is PackRat?
PackRat so you know recursive descent?
Nope.
Okay, so recursive descent is probably one of the simplest parsing algorithms that's out there. It's usually, if you've ever looked at Jack Crenshaw's Let's Build a Compiler, that teaches you how to write a recursive descent parser, like the process of writing a compiler for a toy language.
I think I have a vague idea what recursive descent means.
Okay. Yeah, so PackRat is basically memoized recursive descent.
Memoized.
Yeah. Okay. So it's roughly linear in time. It has kind of a large space consumption.
Is it partly due to Brian Ford?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Wow, I just now put two and two together. I'd forgotten that
yes,
fact.
Yes, Brian Ford, the author of Descent, is also responsible for PackRat parsing.
Nowadays,
yes.
He does all these
he's such a great
modern
guy.
Things that are so interesting.
He's super friendly. We were on a panel together at some random conference, and I was like, thank you for PackRat parsing, and he was just so sweet about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so the compiler that we're building is, we were like, okay, well, how could we make this interpreter in our C code faster? Well, turns out LLVM has an API, and so you can basically just, you know, generate platform-independent assembler at runtime and speed up the parser that way. So that's what I've been working on. It's basically compilerception.
A dream within a dream.
Yeah, okay, so...
Pretty serious pursuit of performance there.
It's weird how much stuff turns out to be compilers under the hood, like, when you look up under it. It's like, oh, shit, there's an interpreter inside here.
Uh-huh. Yo, dog, I heard you like compilers.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, no, like, Z3 is written that way.
What's
like,
Z3?
The SAT solver.
Oh, Z3 it's is a new SAT solver.
Z3 is basically a compiler when you uh-huh. lift it, when you lift the hood and look at it.
Neat.
Yeah, yeah.
So the importance of compilers. Maybe we should do another like episode of Octahedron on compilers compiler is special or something.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be important.
Mm-hmm.
Compile all the things.
It's one of those classes that like everybody skips in school because it just seems way too theoretical. But yeah, it's surprisingly practical.
Hmm.
Like, super dumb question. Does it have something to do with basically security? Because if you compile something, then the compiler does something that is all
yeah, it has a
basically black box.
I think the verification is the important part
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
That you can
well, not only
it.
That, this was what I was attributing to Meredith earlier, the concept of langsec that Meredith and others came up with, is that compilers are general purpose tools, and if you don't know how to use the general purpose tool, then you'll make a custom ad hoc solution for what you're currently doing. And those, the custom ad hoc ones, are a ubiquitous source of security flaws, security holes.
Because basically people read a spec and they make their best effort at implementing the spec as described. But if they're, you know, building their input handling ad hoc, they might miss edge cases.
Yeah.
And you know, you can certainly you know, do generative testing to try to create those edge cases and catch them in testing. But given that we do actually know how to generate verifiable parsers and verify them, you know, that's what I'm just trying to work towards in terms of like engineering tooling that's easy to use.
Another way that the compilers in general relate to security, you'll enjoy this, Meredith. There was recently a live scam run on Ethereum users in which the scammer said, I'm doing this thing. I made this Ethereum smart contract, and he described it in words, and then he showed the source code. And here he gave the reference so you could interact with his smart contract. And it looked like, from that description, that you could take advantage of the smart contract, that if you put in some of your money, you could withdraw your own money plus some of his back out.
Ooh.
Okay, so it was a trap for people who would be willing to do that.
Yeah,
okay?
This is like a traditional confidence game, basically.
Sure, it's that kind of confidence game. But the part you'll enjoy is you could read the source code, and the source code did. It would work. You could get his money if you followed that. But there was a bug in the Ethereum, which compilers, I forget the name of the compiler, but there was a bug in the current version of the, or in a version of the Ethereum compiler, so that the actual script that was running on the live Ethereum machine wouldn't do what you thought it did.
Wow, reflections on trusting trust
exactly.
All but in, over
but,
again.
But in reverse. Yeah, no, I guess you're right. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
On trusting trust.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It always comes back to some degree to the moral of there's no such thing as a free lunch, right?
Yeah, there's
and
that
yeah.
too.
If you expect a free lunch, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, it reminds me of what musical is it where the grifter says, I never managed to cheat a man, but he thought he was cheating me.
I don't remember what musical that is, but I've heard that sentiment in a couple of places.
So how much would you have to put in to get something out?
I don't remember.
What was the minimum bet?
I don't remember. I don't know if it was actually if anyone actually fell for it before it was exposed.
Yeah, but we were actually planning on Octahedron like a special episode which will come sometime on just weird contracts.
Mm.
I really do think that Ethereum contracts. Is just going to be like the obfuscated C contest all over again.
Mm.
You know, except for actual high stakes.
Right. Which makes a big difference.
As opposed to like, you know, writing a text adventure in the preprocessor or something.
Yeah, like one contract, for instance, called Unicorn Meat, I think. Meat. But I can mention it later. Basically, I think the smallest... that's going to be a surprise for the next Octahedron. I'm going to talk about this contract, which is Unicorn Meat Grinder.
Unicorn Meat Grinder.
Yes.
I'm loving the naming.
So okay, then I asked maybe a question. What?
I mean, Ryan is next.
Okay, Ryan.
I'm next. Okay.
Yes, you next.
Sweet.
What are you doing?
Lately, I've been mostly live streaming different tech events, meetups, and things like that, conferences and stuff, and then working on Alexandria, which is using blockchain to create an index for IPFS data. essentially. So trying to get away from the tracker problems of BitTorrent.
How do you, I mean, you iterate over hashes? No.
No, so because this is why I was asking Zuko about the memo field, because we use the Florencoin blockchain, which allows for 528 bytes of text data. And this is all metadata that you can, when you publish something, you can publish a video or music or whatever. So you publish the hash from IPFS plus searchable terms, title, description, and things like that, goes straight into the blockchain. And so we wrote an API that allows you to search for any kind of media, whether it's music or videos that you're looking for, software, 3D printable objects, whatever it is, and then you can find it on IPFS. So I was super curious about how Zcash could play into
this. Hey, Ryan, remember that time we met and you gave me a ride home like 2 or 3 years ago?
Right, yeah.
And we talked about this whole... That's partly why I put the encrypted memo field into Zcash.
No,
I had
shit.
Forgotten about that. Yeah.
Whoa, that's awesome. Yeah, because I would love to like see how Zcash could play into this because...
Yeah.
I'm curious, is that memo field encrypted? How does this...
It's encrypted in the same way that the transaction is encrypted, which
means...
So you
have that selective disclosure thing going on.
Yeah, the sender and the receiver can see it. Mm-hmm. And then if either one of them extracts the transaction view key and gives that to a third party, then the third party can see it. So I think it's really exciting. I'm really looking forward to seeing what people do with that because, like I was saying earlier, it combines the blockchain property and the encryption property. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time I'm aware of to have both of those properties in the same system.
Yeah.
About this
yeah,
viewing absolutely. Key, can I just expose the memo field and not the sending and receiving address?
No.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure not.
Yeah. Okay. It's
one I might key, have to so. Review, but the way it's intended to be used is that you would expose all of the...
Yeah.
It's intended to be so that you can show someone the transaction in the blockchain. Mm-hmm. So it would be the recipient, the amount, the block height, and the memo field is all that is visible.
Okay. I think we have to move now.
Okay. I think it's time I have an idea. Basically, we all go and listen to the talk by Pesco about Zcash, and then we just do it a half an hour.
There's a bad robot battle happening right now,
yes.
too.
Yes. Yes, so... I'll go.
I kind of want to see bad robots fight.
Okay, let's just then.
It was really fun at camp.
Really?
Yeah. Shitty robot wars. I got pulled into judging it at camp, and it was hysterical.
I'm super excited about that.
I've got the link to that Ethereum scam if you want that exploits a bug in the compiler.
Nice.
Where should I send the link?
Just tweet it at me.
Will do.
Yes. Excellent. So I think we should just. Keep it like a very short octahedron today, and we go and listen to the talk.
Like a teaser for shows
like
to come.
Like a teaser for the show to come. Thanks, everyone, for coming.
Thank you.
Because it was super stressful. I thought nothing going to happen because I never managed to do anything at Chaos Congress. And this time, we actually managed to record something.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yay!
It was lovely being a part of it, even for the short little while.
Yeah.
My life is complete now. Thanks.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Let's start.
Goodbye.
Bye.